Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on July 29th, and this is program 201 of the WGN Radio Theater. To my right, the vivacious, very effervescent Lisa Wolf, the woman with the largest dimples on the planet.
I'll try to stop smiling so much.
She has some big dimples,
this girl. Help those dimples decrease.
You know, you can see Lisa's dimples on the TV screens, right? On the computer screens.
Why don't you tell everybody how that works,
Carl? I have no clue how that works. But that's why I surround myself with very smart people like Aubrey.
Right.
And Shantae and you and Mike.
Right.
How does it work? How can you watch us on the computer?
Well, you can go to WGNradio.com and you can hit the button that says watch live.
That's it? You just click a button?
Yeah. It's really easy.
That is easy.
And we can send out birthday wishes, and we can wave, and we can do all sorts of fun behind the scenes.
Maybe we'll
do a little Facebook Live behind-the-scene video tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Well, also tonight we have classic radio shows all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with James Stewart starring in The Six Shooter. Then it's Brian Donlevy starring on Dangerous Assignment. Then Bobby Ellis is Henry Aldrich on The Aldrich Family. That's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming biography, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, about a quadriplegic who turns to drawing as a form of therapy.
Hmm.
And the winner gets two tickets to see Hair, which is playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago.
Yeah, is that the one where it goes, long, beautiful hair? No, that's a this is a song,
I don't know
right?
what that is.
That's a song.
No, this is Let the Sun Shine In.
Oh, it's like
The Age of Aquarius.
Age of Aquarius.
And Good Morning, Starshine.
Well, they do great plays
at Mercury Theater.
It's
a great show at a great theater, so I think it's going to be a winner.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be there next week.
Well, you can win two tickets, 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. This actor played Ephraim Diveroli in War. Did I say it wrong? In War Dogs.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons and ammo. That's going to win this deal for us.
Is it Ephraim or Ephraim?
I just like to laugh at
Ephraim you. Ephraim or Ephraim Diveroli in War Dogs. Who is that actor? Call us 312-981-7200. I'll bet your Aubrey knows. I'll bet you. No, he doesn't know. All right, give us a call, and we'll find our winner after these words.
And this is the WGN Radio Theater Show 201.
What is it? Would you like to?
WGN Radio Theater Show 201. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons and ammo. That's going to win this deal for us.
All right, we have Marnie on the line. Hey, Marnie.
Yes, hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. Great. We're great. And we're hoping you recognize that actor.
Yeah, Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill is exactly right. And we are thrilled to give you a pair of tickets to see Hair. It's a rock musical. It's now playing at Mercury Theater Chicago through September 17th. I look forward to being there. I think I'm going to be there next Thursday.
Make sure you shampoo your hair before you go there.
Yeah, yeah, that was exactly.
You want your hair to look great.
Yeah, of course, hair.
Gee, my hair smells terrific.
Gee, my hair smells terrific.
Remember those commercials?
Yeah, like short and sassy.
Marnie, do you remember those commercials? Gee, your hair smells terrific.
Yeah. What do you use?
I,
Marnie, what shampoo do you use? Putting you on the spot.
Pantene.
Pantene's good.
Pantene
is good. Yeah, I like it.
I have one. I got one at Costco that I like.
Lisa likes Costco.
I do. I love Costco. It's Nexus, and you get it at Costco in these great big,
I'm
like,
with
salon.
Marnie. I like Pantene.
Yeah. You don't need too much shampoo, though.
Marnie.
Well, Marnie, congratulations.
Is going to see hair.
She's going to go see hair. Make sure to wash your hair. It's at Mercury Theater Chicago, and you can check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
You too.
Thanks. Enjoy the show. All right. We're going to enjoy the six shooter, but before we do, I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text in line, and we love when you text into us, and we try to answer everybody. If you have any questions about the show or just anything you want to talk to us about, our text in line is 312-981-7200. We see every single text that comes in. And it gives Lisa something to do. She doesn't fall asleep then if she's answering
right, that
texts.
That way it keeps
so
me very busy.
Please text
computer.
In so she's not
right
by about the second hour of the show. 312-981-7200. All right, time for the six shooter. It was a Western. It starred James Stewart as Britt Ponsett. He was a frontier drifter and kind of all-around good guy. And it premiered on NBC in 1953. Ponsett carried a gray steel six-gun with an unmarked rainbow mother-of-pearl handle, and people called them both the six-shooter. And Stewart was perfect, Lisa, as the slow-talking maverick who found himself embroiled in other people's problems and sometimes had to shoot his way out. It was a great Western, but it came a little too late, only lasted one season on the radio, but I think you will enjoy this episode very much. It's called Gabriel Starbuck, and it stars James Stewart from November 22, 1953, Here's part one now of The Six Shooter.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both The Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
How's that, Alf? Short enough for you? I asked you if it was short enough for you.
Well, give me the mirror so I can take a look.
There you are. Well?
Don't look to me like you cut it at all.
Oh, now, Alf.
You're still there, ain't it? Hanging down the back of my neck.
Well, I figured you'd want to be in style. Fellas in just the other day, come from Kansas City. Said that's the way all Easterners are having a haircut.
Well, I ain't no Easterner, and I don't aim to be spending a quarter every week for a shave and a haircut, so start slicing it off.
Okay, okay. Need to get the head up.
Oh, sorry, Breezy. I reckon I ain't feeling up to snuff today.
Can't say I blame you. I heard about the town meeting last night.
Yeah.
You told him yet?
I don't see why everybody's in such a rush all of a sudden. They waited 40 years. A couple more hours ain't going to make no difference.
You're going to do it today then, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to do it today.
Poor old Gabe. Wonder how he'll take it. I'm sure glad it ain't me that has to break the news.
Stop talking about it, Breezy, and finish my hair.
Well, Gabe's a sensible man. He's not going to hold it again, you know, seeing as how the whole town's agreed.
Well, the whole town don't know him like I do. I was here when he first come to Yellow Crest. I don't know if it wasn't for Gabe Starbuck, there wouldn't be...
Howdy, mister.
Paul.
You're next. Just be a couple of minutes. Dodge City Papers there if you'd like to read it while you're waiting.
Thank you. Thanks.
Britt.
Now, you sit still.
Britt Ponsett.
Huh?
Don't you remember me, Britt?
Why, I...
Alf? Alf Crandall?
Alf? Alf Crandall? Oh, sure, I remember you.
Well, what happened to your beard?
Breezy here shaved it off 3 years ago.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. A couple of the boys paid him to do it while I was asleep in the chair.
Is that so?
I ain't never forgiven you for that, Breezy.
You could have growed it back, Al.
Well, it wouldn't have been the same. Took me 25 years to get that stand of whiskers. Besides, once Maddie seen me without him, folks do say I look younger.
Well, you look so young, I hardly recognize you. That's...
Well, what about you, Brett? How's the world been treating you?
Oh, first rate, first rate.
You just hit town.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. I've been out on the Square Moon Ranch last month or so. I ran into a flock of sheep yesterday, and they gave me such a brotherly look, I decided it's high time I get a haircut.
Be right pleased to take care of you, Mr. Ponsett. There. You ought to be short enough, Al.
Well, feels like you got some of it off anyhow.
Just let me give you a little brush. All right, there you go. Oh, thanks. Sit right down, Mr. Bronson. Well, what'll it be? Shave and a haircut?
Haircut'll do it.
Well, you might as well have a shave, too, as long as you're here. I got the kettle on, the towels will be real hot. Why, you won't even feel the razor.
No, I don't think
so. No matter how good a man is at shaving himself, it's not the same as having a barber do it.
Oh,
now, you
no,
take
no.
having a horse shod. You don't do that yourself unless it's an emergency.
No,
you go to an expert. Well, sir, it seems to me a man's face ought to be as important as his horse.
Yes, but
it seems to me that when a fellow wants to get a...
All right, Brady,
you can give me a shave, too.
Yes, sir, Mr. Fonzie, yes, sir. I'll just trim some of this hair off while the water's warming up.
You gonna be around town for a spell, Britt?
Just overnight, Alf. I'm due back to Square Moon tomorrow.
Well, I'd sure like to stay and chew the fat, but, I'm due over to Gabe's Starbucks office.
Oh, say, how is he? Gabe. Gee, I haven't seen hide nor tail of him. Must be over 4 years.
Oh, that's right. You and him used to be real good friends, didn't you?
Oh, we sure did. It was Gabe Starbuck gave me my first pony.
Well, as a matter of fact, he's aging, Brett. He's aging fast.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. He's not down sick, is he?
No. No, Gabe wouldn't let himself get down no matter how he felt.
Uh-huh. What's he up to nowadays?
Same as ever.
Well, you mean he's still sheriff?
Yeah, he's still sheriff. At least he is today.
Oh?
Truth is, we had a meeting just last night. Decided the town's got to have a new sheriff. And that's what I'm going over to talk to Gabe about now.
Uh-huh.
You don't want it too short, do you, Mr. Ponsett? Fellow's in from Kansas City the other day. Says back there folks ain't cutting their hair so short anymore.
Well, you better trim it pretty close, Breezy. I may not be in a barbershop again for quite some time,
Whatever you say. It appears to me people around here don't want to be in style.
Nobody wants to get rid of old Gabe, Britt. But the town's changed. Well, we got near 700 people living here now.
That many?
Yeah, there's a new bank, too. Maybe you saw.
Yes, I did, yes.
Not doing very good, though. Folks are afraid their money won't be safe. Oh, we haven't had any robberies, not for quite a spell. As long as Gabe's sheriff, well, there's not much he could do to stop an outlaw if one did happen to come our way. You know, old Gabe being so old and all.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Doggone it, Britt. We all realize that we owe him an awful lot. Cleaned up Yellowcrest. Made it possible for decent people to live here. Of course, that was 40 years ago. Things are a lot different now. We gotta have us a new sheriff, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Does Gabe know you're planning on replacing him?
No. We ain't told him yet, but can't put it off much longer.
I see. It's gonna hurt him pretty bad, isn't it?
Well, how would you feel if it was your place, you give your life to a town, your whole life, and they say, we're sorry, but we gotta put you out to pasture. You're too old.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if he was to have a deputy.
We talked about that. Town ain't rich enough to afford two salaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gabe's got a good, sensible head on his shoulders.
That's what I said, Mr. Ponsett. That's just what I said.
He probably won't like the idea of losing his job, not at first, but... He'll see that you don't have much choice in the thing.
Now, you just lean back. That's better. Be sure and tell me if this towel's too hot.
A little
warm?
I guess I can stand it.
I'm real glad you don't think we're being too hard on Gabe, Britt. Say, that gives me an idea. Well, seeing as how you understand the predicament we're in, about Gabe, I mean... Maybe you wouldn't mind sort of preparing him?
No, wait, just a minute, Alf.
Now, your old friend, you said so yourself. It'll be different having the news come from you.
No, it's none of my concern.
Here's another towel, Mr. Ponsett. Now, just lean back.
You're going to be seeing him anyway, Brett. Now, all you have to do is kind of lead the conversation around to him retiring, you know. Lay the foundation and... And then later on, when everything's...
I won't do it, Al. I won't do it now. You're just wasting your breath.
How in thunder am I going to get this lather on, Mr. Ponsett, if you keep moving around like
I'm only asking you to talk to Gabe because, I'm apt to say the wrong thing. You know me, Britt, always putting my foot in my mouth.
And hold still.
Now, Al, I tell you, you're not going to put...
Your own fault, Mr. Ponsett. Now, I told you to keep quiet.
Please, he's right. Just sort of take it easy, Britt, while I sort of explain what I had in mind. Then if you still aren't willing.
Well, between the shaving and the hot towels and Alf harping at me, not that I agreed to tell Gabe the town was getting a new sheriff. I didn't agree to that, mind you, but all I said was that I'd sort of feel him out, see how the land was lying. Anyway, about 20 minutes later, I was coming along the boardwalk heading for Gabe's office. Well, it sure sounded like shooting to me. When I looked around, nobody seemed to be paying any attention. What's that? Well, the fellows arguing politics over the post office steps, they didn't even stop to take a breath. And the ladies in Johnson's Mercantile, they went right on measuring yardage like they hadn't even heard it. Well, I was pretty sure where it was coming from now. I was right behind the sheriff's office. Opened the front door. No sign of Gabe. No sign of anybody, for that matter. And then I saw him. Right through the back window. And I saw why folks hadn't been very upset about the gunfire. Gabe was having himself a little target practice out there, aiming at a tin can sitting on a pile of lumber. It had just been 4 years since I'd seen him last, but... he looked good 10 years older. Smaller, too. He kind of shrunk and bent over with thin, yellow-gray hair and long, bony arms that didn't seem to have much meat on them. Yeah. He sure wasn't having much luck hitting that tin can, either. Hello, Gabe.
Hmm?
Oh, that's Brett Ponson.
Well, I'll be doggone. Well, it's sure good to see you. Yeah, for a second there, I didn't recognize you. His son got my eyes. I blinded me, son.
Sure. How are you, Gabe?
Well, never better. Never felt better in my life.
Glad to hear it.
Well, I was just doing a little shooting.
Yeah, I saw you.
Well, not that I need any practice, you understand, Britt. But I was worried about one of my guns. I think it throws a little to the left.
I say,
Yeah, that's why I missed my last shot. I guess you saw me miss it.
Oh, well, a man can't hit anything if his gun's not working.
Yeah. Well, let's go inside where we can sit down and have us a talk.
Fine.
Well, you're looking good, Brett. Real good.
Oh, well, a little older, maybe. Well, I guess that happens to all of us, doesn't it?
I don't know. Man's only as old as he feels.
Yeah.
Just take that chair, Britt, over there.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I'll sit by the window here, where I can keep an eye out on the street.
I was kind of surprised to hear that you're still sheriff, Gabe.
Don't see why it should have surprised you.
Well, you know, you must be getting along, Gabe.
Well, I'm 64, Britt. 64 last spring.
Now, Gabe.
Well, might be 65. The family never kept no record. But I ain't no older than that.
No.
Don't look no older.
No.
Do I?
No. You still living alone?
Well, of course I'm still living alone. You think I need a keeper or something?
Oh, no. I was just wondering if you ever got a hold of that ranch you used to talk about. That's all. You remember?
Ranch?
Yeah, don't you remember that? When I was a kid, you always said someday you're going to have a ranch. After you'd retire from being sheriff, of course.
Oh, I still aim to do it. When the time comes, of course, there ain't no sense in thinking about it now.
Oh?
Oh, no. Yellowcrest is growing, Britt. Growing fast. That's when a town needs law and order the most. When it's busting its britches. And seeing as how I'm the only experienced lawman in these parts, well, it's my duty to stay on the job. I owe it to the folks here. Why, if I was even to think about retiring, well, they just wouldn't know what to do. They'd be plumb helpless. Well, I ain't got no choice, Britt. You know how it is.
Sure, sure, Gabe. I know.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment.
See, I don't have to say it now. He said it.
Right. See, he took your job.
Gosh. He's going to get a... He's going to take... He's going to get
my... What
are
you do about it, Carl?
Oh, my gosh. Who is that guy? I think it's Hal Gibney. Let's see if I'm right. Sounded like Hal Gibney to
me. You're probably right.
You know, so there's a little bit of a controversy. I said, hair, long, beautiful hair. And Al Breslin...
Breslov,
texted you and said that that's the right song. That's
he
the
did.
Key song from the play.
He did. And somebody
and
else
somebody
texted
else said,
and
no.
said it was...
So,
the
cowbells.
So,
it might still be
the cowbells.
The cowbells.
You are always just like a couple letters off.
You should just give it to me. It's like a, you know, when you play hand grenades or horseshoes.
Right.
You're close.
Just
it's good enough.
Just a little off, but almost there.
Mm.
Yeah, this one, somebody said it's the cowbells.
I think my song, Hair, Long, Beautiful Hair, is the main song from Hair.
That's what Al and
I believe in Al.
And Jane. That's his wife.
All
right.
Dane
Jensen,
I believe in both of them.
Wife.
Yes, I believe in both of them.
I'm going to look into it.
All right. First, these words, and then we'll be right back.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. All right, Lisa. Apparently, I'm a genius.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but now I know that you are a genius.
Actually, it's one above genius. It's genius.
Oh, yeah. You're like a Mensa.
Yeah. And so here's a little bit of that song that is the theme song to Hair.
Oh,
I got it now, Lisa.
Honestly, I couldn't tell what you were singing. Like, I heard the words, but the tune didn't quite, like, make sense in my brain.
If I was a singer, I'd be on American Idol. I'm not a singer.
Right.
I'm on WGN. You're
right. But it's almost the same thing.
Right.
WGN and American Idol.
Well,
it's kind of similar.
You do use your voice.
Yes.
So.
You do, and you do get judged by many.
This is true.
That is true, too.
But I can't believe that I knew something about Broadway. That's like you... coming up with something I didn't know about classic radio.
Well, just in my defense,
yeah.
Had you been able to sing the tune,
right.
I would have recognized it. I've seen Hair many,
I'll give
many,
you that.
Many
I'll
times.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
And I'm going to see it again
I'm
on,
a poor
next
singer.
Week.
Are you and saying I'm a poor singer?
No, I didn't
I will
say
give
that,
you that.
But what I will tell you is next Thursday when I see the show at opening, I will think of you during that song.
Oh, wow. There we
so
go.
So I think that's my repentance.
Yeah. I have, It's nice to be right once a year,
yeah.
at least, when we have a debate.
I didn't say you were wrong.
Usually
I just said I didn't
right.
recognize
Usually
what you were singing.
You're right, and I got
I
one.
I didn't
so,
say no. I said so I didn't know what you were singing,
just,
to my defense.
Just give it to me.
To my defense, I had no idea what you were singing.
Well.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So, but enjoy the show, because I'll bet you it's going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be great.
And if they want me to sing that song...
Like, just
on stage,
you can hop up on there.
If the Mercury Theater wants me to sing that song.
All right. I'll mention it to them.
I am available.
Excellent.
So we're listening to The Six-Shooter from November 22nd, 1953, Gabriel Starbuck, James Stewart. Here's the conclusion of The Six-Shooter.
Now, Act Two. Of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Hello,
talk, Gabe and me, sitting there in the office watching the wagons creak along outside the window. I guess we've about covered everything. Folks we'd known, old times. The only thing we didn't discuss was Gabe's return from sheriff. Anyhow, after I left him, I had supper and took a little stroll. Oh, it must have been about 9 o'clock when I got settled down for the night in my room in the Parker Hotel. My bed was real comfortable, a lot softer than those bunks out at Square Moon Ranch. Maybe that's why I had so much trouble dropping off to sleep. Yeah? Yeah, who are they?
Alf Crandall. You asleep,
Brent? Oh, no. Come on in, Al. Oh, come on in. I'll just get this lamp turned over here. There we are.
I didn't mean to wake you. Ned Parker told me you only turned in a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I'll pull up a chair. Yeah,
thanks. You know, I was looking for you this evening after supper.
Well, I went for a walk.
Oh?
You were right, Alf. Yellow Crest sure has changed. That's a fine new church going up there by the creek.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to find out a bit was whether you talked to
Gabe. Lots of new buildings over south, too. Mighty fancy houses. Some of them look like they're going to be two stories high over there. Yeah?
How'd he take it?
Why, how did he take what? Oh, you mean Gabe?
Well, who else would I mean? Well?
Well, I didn't tell him, Alf.
Huh?
I told you I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it.
I don't blame you, Britt. I shouldn't have asked you in the first place. It was my job.
I did kind of hint around once or twice, but I could see what it did to him. Just the idea of not being sheriff anymore. It's all he's got, Alf. He doesn't have a family and kids to worry about. Gabe's the sheriff of Yellow Crest, and if he ever stops being the sheriff, he won't be anything.
I know, Britt. I know, but what can we...
What's that?
The alarm bell. Must be a fire, I reckon. There's Mark Fawcett running down the street there. He'll know. Doggone his window. Stuck tighter. Mark! Mark, up here, Mark! What are they ringing the bell for?
Somebody robbed the bank.
The bank?
We're meeting over at the sheriff's office.
Well, I guess it was bound to happen sooner or later, Britt.
Yeah. Hand me my pants, will you? Still ringing when Alf and I rode up to Gabe's office. Everybody in town has heard of it by now. There were 10 or 12 men standing around the streets, others coming up from all directions. Gabe was standing right by his horse, right in the middle of things, taking charge. There wasn't much doubt about it. He was still sheriff of Yellow Crest.
Really? You boys know Britt Ponson, don't you?
What happened, Gabe?
Well, it was just an accident. I seen him. An accident, pure and simple. They was riding out of the alley from behind the bank, giving the horses a spur. Couldn't get a look at their faces, but the way they was riding, that made me suspicious.
Uh-huh.
So I thought maybe I ought to see if everything was all right at the bank. Went around to check. Back door was broke open, wide open. Paper scattered around inside. Jim Waterby's over there now trying to find out how much they took.
Didn't try to follow him, the outlaws.
Well, they was gone before I knew they was outlaws. Before I knew for certain, that is. I seen which way they're headed. East.
East. Don't make sense, Gabe. They'd have to cross the Salt Flats if they went east.
Sure they would.
That's the way they went. Right toward the flats.
Well, you must have been a-seeing things. Man would be a fool to strike out that way.
200 miles without a water hole.
Oh, I bet they turned off, went up in them hills.
Well, I'm the one who seen them, ain't I?
$2,500, Gabe. That's what they stole.
Oh, that's so, Jim.
Sack of gold and a sack of currency. Yeah. $2,500, as close as I can figure it.
Well, boys, let's see if we can pick up the trail. Easy, Rusty, easy.
Still determined to chase them out onto them flats.
Yeah, we want to catch them, don't we?
If we do, we got to use our heads, Gabe. Men smart enough to rob that bank ain't going to take a chance on dying out there in that salt. They'd go for the hills.
Mark is right, Gabe.
You tell me I can't believe my own eyes.
Well, it was pretty dark. Maybe you got confused. Maybe it looked like they was heading east.
Now, we're only wasting time arguing with him. Let's go.
I'm the sheriff of Yellow Crest. I'm running this posse, ain't I?
Gabe, we're riding toward the ridge.
All right. Come on, Rusty. Come on.
Gabe. Hey,
Hey, Gabe!
You can't stop him, Brett. When he gets his mind set, nobody can stop him.
Guess this just proves we was right about Gabe. He ain't up to the job of being sheriff no more.
Yeah, I guess you're right, sure.
Okay, boys, I'll lead the way.
Yeah. Hey, come on, this Brett.
Oh, you got enough man without me.
Search yourself.
I watched him wind along toward the rise of the purple hills west of town. After a couple of minutes, the night swallowed him up, and the hoofbeats trickled off in the silence. All right, Scar, come on. I turned Scar east. It wasn't like Gabe to be stubborn about something as important as a bank robbery. Oh, I'll grant you, it didn't seem very sensible for a couple of bandits to take off across the salt flats. And Gabe's eyesight wasn't what it had been once, of course, but I just couldn't believe he'd be dead wrong. Scar threw up his head when the smell of salt hit his nose. He sure didn't like the idea of walking out into it. Easy, boy. Easy now. Easy now. We're not going very far. Come on. Come on now. Nothing but white as far as you could see. Stretched out taut like a cavalry blanket. White salt picking up the moonlight and bouncing along ahead of us. The funny thing, though, there was only one set of hoof prints out there on the flats. Well, about 10 minutes later, I spotted Gabe. Whoa, boy, whoa. Whoa, boy. He wasn't riding very fast, so I slowed up. I figured it was just as well Gabe didn't see me. I didn't want him to think that I'd tagged along because I was worried about him, you know. And then the darndest thing happened. He swung his horse around and started backtracking. Here, boy, come on. I eased Scar over behind a couple of gray boulders so we'd be out of sight, and Gabe came right toward us. At first, I thought he knew where we were. Then he turned his horse again and walked him out in the salt. But for a couple of minutes, I couldn't figure out what he was up to. It seemed to me like he was just wandering around, no purpose at all. And then the next thing that happened was even stranger yet. Gabe jerked his gun out of his holster and he began firing. And he wasn't aiming at anything. He, as far as I could see, he was just shooting up into the sky. Yeah, he left off two or three more shots and wheeled around and galloped past me on his way back to town. And I saw him reach in his saddlebags and bring out a couple of cloth sacks and hook them over his saddle horn. They were the kind of sacks banks used for carrying money. Yeah. Well, there just wasn't any doubt about it now. The story of that bank robbery was something Gabe had made up out of whole cloth. Oh, somebody had broken into the bank, all right. Well, it wasn't an outlaw, though. It was Gabe. Well, I waited, oh, maybe 15 minutes. And then I heard the alarm bell start off again. The posse was pulled up in front of Gabe's office. Bell must have brought him out of the hills. Gabe was handing the cloth sacks to Jim Waterby. I pulled up just in time to hear the tail end of what he was saying.
Well, I ain't sure I hit him, you understand. This gun of mine's been thrown a bit to the left lately. But when I started shooting, they dropped these here bags and went galloping off. By the time I stopped to pick up the money, I reckon that's what's in them. Well, them outlaws was just plumb out of sight. Yes, sir. I figure there wasn't much need of chasing them no further. Like as not, they'll never make it cross the salt anyway.
Now you did right, Gabe.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's all here. Every cent.
Hey, Britt, you hear what happened? Gabe caught up with the bandits, shot it out with them, and brung back what they stole.
Did he?
Yeah.
That don't seem possible. Them having a head start and all.
Well, you know Rusty when I give him his head.
Well, maybe the bandits was lost. Maybe they didn't know about them flats.
Yeah, I reckon they didn't. I reckon that's it.
If they knew where the bank was, they'd know about that salt.
That's right. What are you getting at, Mark?
I don't know. There's something funny about this. There's two of them, you said, huh?
That's right.
Two of them against you?
Well, what's so funny about that? Many's the time I shot it out with more than two men.
That's right out there, boys. Have a look around.
Well, whatever you say, Mark.
Sure.
Hold on a minute. I think maybe I can save you a trip. The fact is, I was following Gabe.
Oh,
yeah, I followed him right out on the flats.
What?
Oh, I know you didn't see me, Gabe. I was behind you, but I could see you just plain as day.
Now, Britt, you gotta let me...
You mean you seen the gunfight, too?
Listen to me, Britt, listen to me.
Was he telling the truth, Britt?
Yeah, that's right, was it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I never saw a fight like that before, not in my whole life.
Britt. What about the bandage, Britt? You get a chance to recognize him?
No, I'm afraid I didn't.
You didn't stick around, eh? Once Gabe started shooting?
No, I... Well, as a matter of fact, when Gabe was through shooting, well, it was like they hadn't even been there.
No.
I'll be darned.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was, all right. Just like they hadn't been there at all. I don't know how Gabe had found out that the town was talking about having a new sheriff. I guess he sort of sensed it. The way folks have been acting. Of course, after this holdup, well, they figured out maybe they could afford giving him a deputy. Jim Waterby, that's the banker, he put up part of the money, and then they didn't have much trouble raising the rest. I had a little talk with Gabe just before I left town. We didn't mention that night out on the flats, neither one of us. But he did give me his word that the next time there's any trouble, well, he'd let his deputy do a good share of the taking care of it. But the way things worked out, though, there haven't been any more robberies in Yellowcrest. Not one single solitary robbery. They say it's because of Sheriff Gabe. Outlaws just don't want to tangle with him. They all must have heard about what happened that time a couple of them tried to hold up the Yellowcrest bank.
The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burke, and the transcribed story is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Herb Bygren, John Stevenson, Lamont Johnson, Dal McKinnon, and Old Gabe was played by Bill Johnstone. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, from all of us who each week bring you The Six Shooter, a special salute to NBC-affiliated station WGBF, Evansville, Indiana, on the occasion of their 30th anniversary. Happy anniversary, WGBF, and best wishes to all of your listeners. This is Hal Gibney speaking. Tonight, hear Lily Palmer and Rex Harrison in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
Well, there you have it. The Six Shooter from November 22nd, 1953. That's called Gabriel Starbuck, and it stars James Stewart. You know, he did not want to be called Jimmy Stewart. Did you know that, Lisa?
I've heard that before.
Yeah, he preferred to be called...
Yeah, he was called Jimmy Stewart.
I know, but he didn't like it. He wanted to be called James Stewart.
Well, you don't like to be called Calamari,
but no,
you are.
I don't, but
so
that is sort
of
my name.
That's the way
of the world. But there's I have an R, one extra R in my name, Carl Amari.
Oh, I didn't know.
If there was no
Wait,
R,
what?
Then it would be Calamari.
I don't get it.
But Hal Gibney, I was right. It's Hal Gibney. I'm right twice tonight.
Is
that's
that
a,
right?
That might
that's
be a new
record.
World record.
Yeah.
Hal Gibney doing the announcing on their great cast. We had Herb Vigran. Also, Bill Johnstone. Bill Johnstone played Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow. And, you know, speaking of The Shadow, Lisa, I was watching Pawn Stars, which is one of my favorite shows. It's about the pawn shop in Las Vegas. And they on breaks, they go to commercials, and they have a trivia contest a lot of times.
Yeah.
And there was a guy that came in with a picture of Orson Welles with signed on a Citizen Kane photo. It was like worth like, I don't know, $3,000 or something like that. And they and the question on the trivia quest the question on the trivia contest before they went to break was, what iconic radio adventurer character did Orson Welles play? And then it had, like, you know, two weird things. And then it said The Shadow.
Oh.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
I was like, see?
Meant to be.
These radio shows are still popular. I mean, there was a trivia question. You know, sometimes on Jeopardy.
I was going to say, every now and then on Jeopardy.
They have a whole category on classic radio.
Yep, I've seen that.
Run that whole category when it comes on there.
Yeah, but you can skip the
but
others,
that's about
but you
it.
Stick with that
but
one.
But on that one, I'm
you've got it.
I got it all figured out. That's the Six Shooter. Hope you enjoyed that. And you know what, Lisa? I have good news for you.
All right.
You don't know this. This is going to be a complete surprise to you.
Uh-oh.
Remember last week you said to be your agent on your Listen to Lisa radio show?
I asked you to be my agent.
Yeah, you asked me to be your agent. I got a station. Picked
is
up
that
a station.
Right?
Found a station. It is a 10-watt non-commercial station in Warsaw, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
They want it. They want your show.
Uh-huh.
You have to move to Warsaw.
Okay.
You have to do it live.
Oh.
But they want it. It's non-commercial. There's no pay.
Oh,
there's no pay.
Okay.
But they
sounds
give
like a deal.
You yeah, they give you a parking space. You
okay.
have a parking space there.
All right.
A badge to get in, you know, because it's like electronic door to get in there.
Okay.
And you have a 30-minute show.
Sounds
4 in the morning.
Really enticing.
4 a.m.
Oh.
On Tuesday nights, which
you know,
is, I guess, Wednesday morning.
Right. I don't know how I could say no to that.
So I got that for you. I get 20% of that.
20% of nothing.
Yeah. But
okay.
So we have, so listen, you're off and running.
Right.
Have
I'm going to take it under consideration.
Yeah, so check that out.
Think about
all right, let's
that
take
one.
A quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what, Lisa?
What?
Tomorrow. Which is actually in
it's still
4
tomorrow.
Minutes, I know.
Yeah.
But actually on our Sunday night show from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning, we will have 3 more classic radio shows. But to start things off tomorrow, Dan Jaffe and Dave Wieske will be here to give away another year's supply, a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. That's quite a nice
quite a gift
to one of our
if
listeners.
If you own a cat.
Yeah, if you own a cat, it's really good.
If you don't
own a cat,
not so much.
Yeah.
It's
still good.
For someone else.
But it's great if you own a cat.
Yeah.
And Dan and Dave come in here every month. This is how great a sponsors they are. They've been with us from day one, first of all, folks. And they're helping bring this radio show to you, Cat's Pride Kitty Litter. So please be loyal to them. And if you have a cat, please switch over to Cat's Pride Kitty Litter. Fresh and Light is the really great brand that they have. And it's there's so many reasons why you should be switching, especially since Dan, his company, gives away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to a WGN listener every month. I mean, that's fantastic. And how do you get this? How do you have a chance to win? Lisa, would you mind telling the listeners
I would not
what
mind.
They have to do?
Just send in a photo of your cat and send it to Cat's Pride Photo. @gmail.com. I like the way you're mouthing
it
while I say it.
That's
no, I wasn't.
I just want to make sure you had it right.
I've got it right.
I know. You're great.
Just checking.
You're great,
Cat's
Lisa.
CatsPridePhoto@gmail.com. Send a picture of your cat. You can be in it if you want. You don't
yeah,
have
we,
to.
I like it when the owner's in
but
it.
But it's up to you. You just include your name, your cat's name, your city and state, and he will randomly draw one lucky winner.
We take them all and put them in a little.
That's what random means.
Okay.
He'll pick one randomly.
Let me write that down in my
okay.
random.
Put it in your notes. And that person will get certificates for enough litter for an entire year.
Yeah, it's a great prize.
So we appreciate your support, and it's great to have them in, and it's great to talk about the benefits of Cat's Pride and what the parent company does in terms of their donation and their giving to kitty litters and dog shelters across the world.
Right, they're saving kitties and doggies' lives. And it's really simple. You can just take that picture tonight and get it into us. You have all the way till tomorrow at 11 p.m. to get that picture in. So make sure you do it because, listen, someone out there is going to win. It could be you. So just take a picture of your cat and email it to us here at
catspridephoto@gmail.com. All right. I wish you could see Carl's lips as I'm saying it and he's mouthing it.
Right.
Just to make sure I got it.
Oh, you're funny, Lisa. Yeah. You know what? You're funny.
Yeah, I'm funny, all right.
Funny smelling.
Well, I took a shower.
Hang on a second.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 6 minutes after midnight here. Hey, you know what? It's Sunday,
it's
Lisa.
Sunday.
Happy Sunday to all of our listeners and to you and to Shante, our producer in the booth. And this hour, it's Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy from 1953. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor's voice stars in the upcoming animated comedy Early Man, which follows caveman Doug and his sidekick as they unite their tribe and save their home. Guess what they're going to win?
What? Hair?
Two tickets to see Hair at Mercury Theater Chicago with what song?
Long, beautiful hair.
And there you go.
I'll sing it amongst many others. I'll sing it if Mercury Theater wants me to.
I know. I'm gonna ask them if they're interested in that. Yeah. I'm sure they will
I
be.
I work really cheap.
I know that. I'm well aware of...
I might even pay them
yes.
for the opportunity to sing
and
on
I
stage.
And I understand that might be the way it might work.
That would probably be the only way
it would work.
I
would pay to see you on stage.
I couldn't do it. I can't sing. I couldn't do it.
I
could do it
that.
Here in front of, you know, a million listeners, but I couldn't do it on stage for 300 people.
Okay.
Because I can't see the listeners here. I mean.
Right.
You know?
You can't really see. All the lights are on and it's
I can
of
sing in front of you
because
I've known you for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. You don't have to.
All right. So you can win some tickets to see Hair. And did you give the hint? Oh, no. I'm giving the hint.
This, I gave a hint.
All right,
but
so they win tickets to Hair, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of The Theory of Everything.
Yes, it is what I want, sir. Please, if you care about me at all, then please just go.
Very English. Very English.
I picked up on that.
All right, 312-981-7200. I wonder how his teeth are.
They're
probably pretty good, right?
I'll have to check on that. I didn't think about that.
I know.
You know what?
There's something
I think
going
just,
on in England, though,
no,
with the dentists.
I just don't
dentists.
Think they value orthodontia the way we do.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a big word.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know what time I always go to the dentist?
Never.
Tooth hurty. All right. Let's take a break. Then it's more. We'll find our winner after these words.
All righty. We are back. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play that movie clip one more time.
Yes, it is what I want, sir. Please, if you care about me at all, then please just go.
So Shante took a call offline, and we found out that Sherry called in, and she knew that that actor was Eddie Redmayne.
Sherry, baby.
You're so close. Did you see the Jersey Boys?
Horseshoes.
The Jersey Boys?
No,
that's one of the great songs.
Okay, hang on a second now. The Jersey Boys?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I saw the Clint Eastwood movie. Very good.
No, I meant the stage production.
Oh, no, I didn't see. I don't see stage plays.
I know that. That's why
like
I asked
that.
You.
But anyhow, I did know Hair.
Sherry's a winner.
I did know the
Yes, you
theme
did. You are
song to
a
Hair.
Mensa genius.
It's genius.
Right, and you know, somebody just texted in, I'm just going to share this, Carl and Hair, no, especially the end
of
scene one.
No.
You know what happens in the end of scene one?
I didn't ever see it.
I think they're like almost nearly naked.
Right. Well, that, yeah, maybe I would see
and
that play
I'm thinking,
then.
No, we don't want you to be in that scene is what we're suggesting.
Listen, I've lost 14 pounds on Nutrisystem, so I've literally got like, I don't know.
So you're ready to be naked?
7-8 more pounds to go and I'll be at my... I'll
and
be
then
at,
you're
like,
ready
my,
to do the
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, then I'll do the scene. I'm not going to do it being still a little over.
Okay. Well, we're going to go with that. Anyhow, Sherry won a pair of tickets to see Hair. It's a rock musical. It's now playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago. It's through September 17th. Some great songs like...
Orthodontia.
Like Let the Sun Shine In, Good Morning Starshine, and...
Aquarius.
And the Age of Aquarius. So you can get tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com.
You know, I am a frustrated singer.
This
you know
is
that,
the
right?
dawning of the
Age of Aquarius.
There we go.
Maybe that's what we'll do on our Facebook Live. We'll sing that song.
Maybe we won't.
Age of Aquarius.
Let's not.
When I was in high school.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Many, many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a play, some kind of play. Maybe it was Hair. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember?
And we did that song. Maybe it was just like something from Hair. You know, it was like just a little song or two. And we did that. We performed that, Age of Aquarius.
Great.
I remember that. And it's never left my head. I mean, it's like, it's one of those songs that once you get it in your head, that's it.
Great.
Right? It's stuck in there.
Excellent.
One of those songs
I wish I could have been there.
Ever kind of pry out of your brain.
I'm so sorry I missed that one.
All right. So that's it?
Yeah.
We got a winner?
We're good. We
got
Sherry.
All right. Two tickets for, all right, great. All right. Make sure you get your Cat's Pride photo in, folks. Take a picture of your cat. Send it. And we had a bunch come in since we talked about it. But Dan Jaffe will be here along with Dave Weiske giving away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. That's tomorrow. Well, actually tonight when we come back here at 11 p.m. So make sure you have your picture in so you can be part of the drawing. All right, time now for Dangerous Assignment. Lisa, this was a spy show, and Brian Donlevy starred as U.S. Secret Agent Steve Mitchell, and he was sent to exotic foreign locations to troubleshoot for the USA. Came to radio in 1949, lasted till 1953. Herb Butterfield played the commissioner. That was his boss, you know, that sent him on these assignments. And they were always very dangerous, hence the title,
right.
Dangerous Assignment. It transitioned to syndicated TV in the early 1950s with 39 episodes. Now, here's what happened, Lisa. This show was very popular on radio. And Brian Donlevy, who was a movie star, you know, was doing this radio show. And he was like, hey, I want to play this this same character on television. And nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. So you know what? He funded it. He went to NBC and said, look, this is going to work on television. I will fund it. I'm going to be the owner of it, but I'll fund it. And NBC said, okay. And you know what? It was a success. And they did 39 episodes. It's been in syndication. And we even have a DVD set available. So anyway, now it's time for the radio show. This is going back to April 8th, 1953. He flies to Paris and solves a spy ring. Here is Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, secret agent on Dangerous Assignment.
Dangerous Assignment, transcribed starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize that this assignment's going to prove that sometimes the nicest thing that can happen to a guy is to get shot at. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
Steve, an ad will appear in a Paris newspaper tomorrow night. It's a job offered by an internationally famous magician named Paul Ducasse. You're going to answer his ad.
Oh, now, wait, Commissioner. If he's looking for someone to saw in half...
He's anxious to secure the services of an English-speaking tutor for his 10-year-old boy. You're it.
Oh, great. Me a tutor yet. Look, suppose I don't fill the bill.
It's all been arranged with Ducasse as a means of getting you into the household without arousing suspicion.
Suspicion of anyone in particular?
Yes, a Madame Berkoff. As a child's governess, she's accompanied Ducasse on several world tours during the past years. He suspected for some time that she's involved with a spy ring, Steve. That she's passing information to foreign agents here and abroad.
I see.
Several days ago, just before they sailed from New York, Ducasse overheard part of a conversation she had with someone over the phone. She acknowledged receipt of certain information, said it would be delivered to somebody in Paris by Friday of this week.
Any idea what sort of information this is?
From what Ducasse could gather, it had to do with the movement of troops.
Oh, so I ease into the Ducasse household, but why is a tutor to a 10-year-old?
Because you're going to have to keep a close watch on the boy, too.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me he's mixed up in this.
Unknowingly, yes. Get over to Paris, Steve. Talk with Ducasse. He'll explain. Find out what this information is and see that it isn't passed on. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Commissioner.
National Broadcasting Company is presenting Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy in the role of Steve Mitchell, colorful two-fisted government agent. At all those places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another dangerous assignment. There's more great mystery and adventure every week on most NBC stations when Dragnet brings you the authentic stories of your police force in action. Dragnet means thrill-filled entertainment. From crime to punishment, Dragnet stories are true. Be sure to hear Dragnet. And there's more adventure and excitement when you tune for Barry Craig, confidential investigator, with William Gargan in the title role. There's always high adventure when Barry Craig takes on an action-filled case. Another exciting program is The Big Story. The Big Story brings you true stories directly from the pages of our nation's leading newspapers. Remember to hear these adventure-packed programs every week on the NBC Radio Network.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Get over to Paris, take over the job as a tutor to a 10-year-old, and somehow intercept certain military information before it reaches a foreign agent there. How the 10-year-old is involved, I don't know, but it ought to be interesting finding out. It's Wednesday a.m. when my plane lands. I check in at a hotel and consult the ad placed in the newspaper by Paul Ducasse. Then I head for the address, a small villa on the outskirts of Paris. A truck is pulling away from the entrance when I get there. The front door is wide open, and the hall is crowded with packing cases and trunks. And before I can ring the bell, a woman appears suddenly at the far end of the hall, comes running toward me.
Oh, the truck. I thought I heard you drive away.
That's right.
Oh, voila. I told the men I wish the trunks taken downstairs. Everything is in such disorder. We arrived ourselves only a few minutes ago.
You've been on a trip, I see. A long one at that, huh?
America, Monsieur Ducasse has been on tour.
I see. You are Madame Ducasse?
Madame Berkov. I'm Monsieur's housekeeper.
Oh, my name's Steve Mitchell. I came in answer to this newspaper ad.
Oh, I see. You enjoy tutoring, monsieur?
Sure. Sometimes it's a little hard on the nerves.
Ah, well, I know. I was Henri's governess for many years. Only last night I learned he was to be taken out of my charge. Frankly, I was relieved.
Oh?
Monsieur Ducasse is right. Henri is growing up. A man's firm hand is needed.
Thank you, Monsieur Kenko, for your visit.
I shall leave letters of recommendation with you that you may inspect them at your leisure, Monsieur Ducasse.
Of course.
You may expect to hear from me not later than this evening, should I decide in your favor.
Very well, Monsieur.
Monsieur Ducasse, this gentleman is waiting to see you.
Ah, bien, bien. I'll be with you in a moment, Monsieur, as soon as...
No, do not bother. See myself out, Monsieur Ducasse. Good morning.
Madame Berkov. What are all these things doing here in the hallway?
The men were instructed to take them downstairs, monsieur, but
they did not do so, hein? Alors, we cannot leave them here. Find Aristide. He's somewhere about the garden, I think. He will move them for you.
Very well, monsieur.
This way, Monsieur Mitchell. We will talk in my study. So, you have met Madame Berkov, hein?
Yeah. I think she was about to paint a rather dismal picture of the situation in an effort to scare me off when you interrupted.
That was to be expected. Do sit down, monsieur.
Thanks. Who was that man you were just talking to?
A Monsieur Kenko, an answer to my advertisement. Excellent references. Too excellent. He probably did not expect me to investigate them.
Look, Monsieur Ducasse, there are a few things about this case I don't follow. For one thing, how is the boy involved?
I believe she is using my son Henri to carry messages for her.
What?
Yes. Not messages in writing, you understand. Rather, the little one carries the message in his brain.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Not so fantastic as it sounds, monsieur. Please, I do not mean to indicate that Henri is a genius of some sort. It is not that at all. He's a normal child. A little above average intelligence, yes, but he does possess a remarkable memory. He's a most retentive mind. Almost photographic.
And Madame, you think, is using his memory to store away her messages?
A little story she reads to him. A list of words he must learn to spell. A poem he must memorize. All carefully arranged in code. And the secret is locked safely away in the child's mind.
Do you have any proof of this, Monsieur Ducasse?
Perhaps. Not too long ago, while we were in Berlin, the boy came to me one day after touring the city with Madame Berkow. He described the trip in detail, and I noticed certain irregularities in the street names. One word, Naturally, it meant nothing to me then, but later...
What was it?
Z-I-T-K-O. Zitko.
Hey, wait a minute. Anton Zitko, Romanian underground leader. He was murdered in...
In Trieste, the day after we had arrived. A coincidence, you think, monsieur?
A coincidence, I don't think. It's beginning to look like Ducasse's thinking is along the right lines. Right now, I want to have a chat with the boy Henri, but it seems he's been sent to spend the day with his aunt, a move to keep him out of Madame Berkov's reach. We spend the next quarter hour going over our plans, and then I go back to my hotel. A few minutes after 7 that night, Ducasse phones me. My application has been officially accepted. I check out of the hotel, stop in at a nearby cafe for dinner, and that's when I get the feeling I'm being watched. The feeling is still with me an hour later when the cab I'm in is heading for Ducasse's house. We're flying low through a quiet residential street when I spot the headlights tailing us, closing in fast.
Hey, driver. Oui, monsieur.
A car behind us. If it comes up alongside, keep your eyes open.
But there's no need for alarm, monsieur.
Here he comes. Watch it. Hey, he's crowding you. Look out.
What? Oh, it is you, Monsieur Mitchell.
That's the second time you've been surprised to see me, Madame Berkov.
Oh, no, we were expecting you. Come in. Monsieur, that bruise on your face.
Oh, a little auto accident. The other car didn't bother to stop.
You were most fortunate.
Yeah, wasn't I?
Ah, Monsieur Mitchell, good evening.
Evening, Monsieur Ducasse.
I will show our new tutor to his room, Madame Berkov.
Very well. I will be in the kitchen should you need me.
This way, Monsieur. Upstairs. I overheard what you told Madame Berkov about the accident.
It wasn't an accident. Somebody deliberately crashed into us. Somebody who wasn't happy to learn that I'd gotten the job. I didn't get anything of a look at him. Probably a hired hand.
Mm. This will be your room, monsieur. And there is the connecting door to Henri's room.
Good.
If you wish to freshen up?
I'd like to see the boy first.
Mm. This way. Henri? Henri, I want you to meet... Henri! Henri, where are you?
Nowhere in sight.
But I told him to remain in his room. Perhaps he's out in the hall. Locked. From here on the inside. He did not use this door.
Over there, Ducasse. The window is wide open.
They have taken him, monsieur. Henri is gone.
Steve Mitchell will continue his dangerous assignment in just a moment. Listen to this and mark it well. More than 10,000 people died last year because they were treated for cancer by quacks. The American Cancer Society urges that you take heed of this shocking fact because treatment for cancer by quacks always leads to death. On the other hand, with prompt, proper medical care, most cancers can be cured. Don't risk your life and don't lose valuable time. If you think you have cancer, go immediately to your physician. For only he can tell you if you have the disease, and only he can treat it properly. Protect yourself by knowing what to watch for and what to do about cancer. As a part of its educational activities, supported by contributions from the public, the American Cancer Society makes this life-saving information available to you personally or in a program for your union, club, or church group. Address your request to Cancer, care of your local post office. Don't delay. Protect yourself now.
All right, that's the first portion of Dangerous Assignment with Brian Donlevy from April 8th, 1953. We'll get back to it in just a few seconds. First, these words. Well, Lisa, what should I be telling this program director from Warsaw, New Jersey? Are you going to take this 4 a.m. gig?
Well, you know, it's very enticing.
Non-commercial radio station.
The only thing that's holding me back is that how would I get back here to do the WGN Radio Theater?
I think this is a bigger opportunity for you.
You could phone it in.
Yeah.
Phone which one?
They want her live there.
They want her live there?
They want her live.
In person live.
Yeah.
That's
what live is. But listen to the gig, though.
Okay.
It's, It's Listen to Lisa, the show that she wants to do this talking.
Right, right.
Is it 1 hour?
It's 30 minutes.
Oh, 30 minutes.
You got to start somewhere.
30 minutes?
It's 30 minutes, but here's the thing. It's 4 a.m. on Tuesday night, actually Wednesday morning, every week, and she has her own parking space.
Well, that does it right there.
Yeah, and it's a 10-watt non-commercial station in Warsaw, New Jersey.
You know what I think?
Do they stream?
No, they don't.
He doesn't know what that means, Roger.
But, you know, here's the thing. New Jersey, let me see if Roger knows this. Here's a trivia question for you, Roger.
I only know a couple places.
There was a superhero that came out of New Jersey. Do you know what it is? 1984 movie about a 98-pound nerd who falls into a vat of acid and becomes this superhero. Do you have any idea?
Oh, Toxic Avenger.
Oh, my gosh. Wrong thing. Hang on a second. What I wanted to do was Roger Badish. I'll tell you what.
He's a smart cookie.
Well, you know what gave it away? A couple of things. One, 84, so it's a newer
superhero.
Well,
I mean, 1984, that was a while ago.
Vat of acid, and the only, there's three vats of acid that I can remember. One was the Joker.
Yeah.
Two was...
you have a party going on up there?
What's
going on up there?
David is still recording stuff in the back.
Oh, okay.
And the other was...
Because I was like, if you're
RoboCop,
having a party, why wouldn't you invite us?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people don't.
Lisa's got her invitation. But
RoboCop, right.
The bad guy in RoboCop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave's in good voice up there.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
You know what? I think I need a new agent.
Why?
Carl's
been your agent?
Yes. Maybe I need a new agent.
Got you your own parking spot.
I know, but the everybody pay is has a little to low.
I started on a 10-watt non-commercial station.
I started at WYND.
Radio. Yeah, but I started at a non-commercial station. This is her own gig. It's Listen to Lisa. It's in Warsaw.
Yeah, you and Ted Knight both got started at a 10-watt station.
Oh, right.
You have to live in Warsaw, New Jersey.
I might have to take a pass, but keep me in mind for other opportunities.
Other opportunities?
Yes.
Wow, she's tough. She's going to turn it down. There's no pay, but I think it's a stepping stone.
I think so.
I think you're missing out, Lisa. Mm-hmm. You know what? Elliot Ephraim.
Oh.
He's a big name. That's a big agent.
I'll take Elliot.
No, I'm not even joking around here. He's like one of the best agents in Chicago. That's who you need to talk to.
All right.
He could get you a gig, and it would probably be a better station than I was. I'm not as good of an agent as Elliot.
I noticed that.
He's one of the best in the city for sure.
Hook us up, Carl.
I want him to represent me. I wish he would.
All right. Well, let's work on this.
When did he call you back?
No, we actually had lunch once. Nice man. Great guy. Yeah. One of the best agents in Chicago. I asked him to represent me, and I never got a call back.
Gosh darn.
But.
You know what?
Why?
But you've been on WGN for over 2 years, you've proven yourself now. You should make another lunch.
Maybe I have a shot.
Yeah.
It would be nice. Wouldn't it be nice to have an agent? Roger, wouldn't that be great?
I have an agent.
You have an agent?
Yeah, I do.
Come on. And you haven't turned him on to me? Girl or guy? Guy or girl?
It's a lady.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Man.
But it's for after SAG. It's for acting stuff.
Oh, it's more acting.
Yeah, it's acting.
No, I'm talking about a radio agent.
No, well, I don't have a voiceover agent.
The big dogs in Chicago have radio agents. You know that, Roger.
We
must not be a big dog.
We're just kind of a little puppy.
That's what I was about to say.
You're like a little chihuahua, right?
Yeah.
A little chihuahua.
Bark, bark.
I'm like one of those hot dog dogs. I like those little hot dog
dogs.
We
want to grow up to be a big dog someday.
Are you an Oscar Mayer wiener? Yeah, like, is that what you're
Oscar
saying, Carl?
Oscar Mayer wiener. I want an agent. I want a radio agent.
I think we need an agent.
He's the biggest guy there is. He's the best in Chicago.
I'm going to reach out to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's a nice man, and he's
isn't he a lawyer?
He represents.
He's a lawyer.
Most agents are lawyers.
Yeah.
Roger,
yeah.
He represents some big talent here.
Well, then why wouldn't he represent us?
I took him to lunch.
Don't laugh so hard.
Hey, Roger, he was nice enough to go to lunch with me.
Of course.
We had a very nice lunch. He was a super nice man.
Wanted to know, one, if you were going to pick up the tab, and two, if you could afford him.
Yeah. I think you don't pay agents. They just get a piece of the take.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. If you could afford him.
And since I've never spoken to him again, my guess is he didn't think I could.
But you have proven yourself since then.
This is true.
Have changed.
How long ago was that?
This was well before WGN. Yeah, it was three or four years ago.
We were on WIND.
Look what Carl's done on his own then.
That's right.
But, you know, I'd still like to have a big, powerful agent representing me.
Oh, you just want to drop names.
I want to be like, I'm represented by Elliot Ephraim.
All right, let's
and then the room stands still.
And they're
wow. Maybe he's listening right now and our phone is going to be ringing off the hook.
I am a big fan.
You know, give us a call right now. We're WGN. Give him the number, Carl. 312.
He represents a lot of big talent here.
981-7200. We will take the call.
Ring, ring.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. And maybe Elliot would do like a 3-for-1 thing where Lisa, you, and I.
We are a team. We are a good team, actually.
That would be good.
Roger's rolling his eyes.
Is Roger listening?
Yeah, he's sitting here.
Are you listening? Okay.
Yeah, I'm.
I thought you were doing like all the other listeners and not listening to what
I'm deep in thought, contemplating the possibilities.
All right.
And with me, when I get deep in thought, I get lost. So. Yeah.
Any radio reenactments lately?
Yes, we've got one coming up on the 11th.
Okay.
At the Claudia Cassidy Theater over at the Chicago Cultural Center. Doors open at 6:30.
On August 11th? Yep. And what shows are you reenacting?
We are doing an Arch Obler play.
A play, Arch Obler play. Okay.
Right.
Do you know which one?
It is something from Manhattan.
A Rocket from Manhattan?
Rocket from Manhattan.
Okay.
Which excellent script.
Oh, yeah, it's a great sci-fi story.
And then we're doing suspense.
Do you want to say?
I'm trying to remember the poster that I designed over a month ago.
Suspense? Okay.
I think we're doing a suspense, and it is Wild Jack Rhett.
Okay, that's a good Western.
And I am the narrator in that.
Oh, great.
Which is a very big role,
And you know
role,
who was
actually.
The narrator on the original one, I think?
Oh, my gosh,
I think it was John Daner.
Really?
So there you go. What do you think of that?
Whoa.
Pretty sure.
I'm in like special company.
It
is.
He played Paladin on the radio. You know that.
My goodness. He was a great character actor in TV shows and movies.
You know it.
You'll be a great narrator, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate it.
And what else? Any other or just those two?
Just those two.
Okay.
Because they're half-hour shows. So
you got a sci-fi and a Western.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
And that's why we talked about this, I think, last week. Why I love suspense so much, because every show was a different genre.
Yep.
And it's just marvelous. And who would think a Western as a suspense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great script, and we got great people. Of course, all the great actors from AFTRA and SAG and people, a couple of them who actually performed some of these original shows back in the day.
Wow.
They're still around.
You mean some of the Chicago actors?
Yes.
Like, do you have a name?
I don't know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the cast list right in front of me.
I'd like to know the names when you have a chance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there was a lot of great actors here in, yes, Lisa.
Oh, Chicago was big for
sure.
Oh,
yeah. Like Harry Elders was here and Annette Sargent and things.
Before we get back into the radio show, I just wanted to mention quickly about the great June Foray.
Yeah, and I interviewed her.
Maybe
I'll play She Passed Away.
I know.
I mean, Carl and I did, but we didn't talk about it on the air.
Age 99. What a nice lady. Yeah. I interviewed her for the show.
And you know what? She had a long, healthy life.
Yeah, she was.
And she was
very active almost till the end, actually.
Exactly. Yeah.
She did a ton of radio shows. Mm-hmm. She was actually on a suspense episode. She starred on a suspense episode. And she worked with Stan Freberg for years,
and then
she was, of course, the voice of Rocky, the flying squirrel, and also Grandma on the, you know, with Tweety Bird and Grandma.
Yeah, a lot of cartoon work.
Just
a
ton. She was actually, she was Natasha on the, Boris Badenoff with Paul Frees, her and Paul Frees.
Yeah.
was Boris Badenov, was Paul Frees. And actually, Paul Frees is on this Dangerous Assignment show we're listening to right now. So let's get back to it. Yeah, let's get back to this 1953 broadcast of Dangerous Assignment.
Now back to Dangerous Assignment and Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Monsieur Mitchell, they have taken my son Henri.
Looks like it, Ducasse. They must have taken him through that open window. We came through the connecting door from my room. We know he didn't leave by that.
And his door here into the hall is locked from the inside. He could not have left by that either. Monsieur, if they have my boy...
Take it easy, Ducasse. We'd better get in touch with the police.
Yes, yes, at once.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
Here, on the hall floor, a bent hairpin.
Hairpin? Madame Berkoff.
Could be, but this piece of string here, too,
It did not work, Papa.
What? Only.
It did not work.
Only, are you all right?
But of course, Papa.
Oh, brother, that's a relief.
Yes. But what is this talk of something which did not work?
The hairpin and the string, Papa.
The hairpin? String? I do not understand.
I think I do. It's the old gag where you tie a string to a bent hairpin, hook it to a key, and then run the string under the door.
Oui, that is it. I was able to lock the door from the hall, but when I tried to unlock it, the hairpin fell off.
Henri, to be trying such a foolish trick at a time like this.
But, Papa, you are the one who taught me the trick.
I? Oh. Well, perhaps I did, but that was a long time ago, and I... Yes, I leave you two to become better acquainted.
See you later, Monsieur Ducasse.
You are my new tutor, Monsieur Mitchell?
That's right, Henri. I understand you're just back from America.
Oui.
Enjoy your trip?
Very much.
Suppose you tell me a little bit about it. Some of the things you saw and the places you went.
Well, New York City was the place I enjoyed the most.
Oh? Well, tell me a little bit about New York.
We were only there a short time, so I could not learn much about it. But I did learn a little.
For instance?
Well, New York City is an area of 320 square miles. There are 40 buildings over 500 feet high, 4 hotels with more than 2,000 rooms. And there are 5 boroughs or districts, Manhattan, Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, and Richmond.
You say you only learned a little about it, huh?
There is more.
I don't doubt it. Which guidebook did you memorize? Go on.
A Dutch settler bought the island from the Indians for $24 in the year 1626. It was then called New Amsterdam. Later, the English named it New York.
He goes on and on while I stand there with my mouth open. The kid is a walking world almanac. Half an hour later, he runs down, and I stagger to my room, groggy. Ducasse is waiting for me.
So, you are getting acquainted with my little Henri, eh?
Getting acquainted? I'm getting a college course. That kid's got enough facts and figures in his head to fill a 5-foot shelf.
What will be your next step, Monsieur Mitchell?
Henri told me Madame Berkoff had planned to take him to the park tomorrow morning.
Huh?
So, I'm going to follow through and see if anyone tries to contact him there. Next morning, I take Henri to the park. We settle down on a bench and start feeding the pigeons. And, of course, Henri gives me a short lecture on the various species of the bird.
That one, the perched on the bench over there. The gray one. That is the commonest type.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Hmm? Oh, well, hello.
Beautiful morning, n'est-ce pas?
It sure is.
And she is friendly.
Yeah. You ever see her before, Henri?
Oh, yes. Here in the park.
Did she ever speak to you before?
No, I guess I am not old enough.
Well, you were telling me about the pigeons, now.
Yes, that one over there.
Well, my little friend, mouse always do calls.
Good morning, Monsieur Gillis. This is my new tutor, Monsieur Mitchell.
Oh, delighted, Mitchell.
Mr. Gillis?
Well, Henri, I've missed you these past weeks. You see, Mr. Mitchell, Henri and I are old friends here in the park.
I have been on a trip to America.
Yes, so I heard. Look here, you must tell me all about it, Henri. I'm always interested to hear anything about the United States.
Henri, go ahead. Tell them about your trip.
I said, no, wait. I have a better idea, Henri. Would you like to go to the carnival this afternoon?
Very much. If it is all right with Monsieur Mitchell.
Well, why, sure, Henri, sure.
Well, splendid. I'll call for you at 2:00, Henri. You can tell me all about your trip then.
I'll get it.
Oh, Mr. Mitchell.
Good afternoon, Mr. Gillis. You're right on time. We'll be ready in just a minute.
We?
Oh, yes, I thought I'd go with you and Henri. That is, if you don't mind.
Well, I would have been delighted, but matter of fact, the reason I stopped by was to give my regrets to Henri. Something's come up I have to attend to.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yes, I'm frightfully sorry. Please tell him I'm sorry. We'll make it another time soon.
All right.
Yes, good day. Mm-hmm.
Who was it, Monsieur Mitchell?
Gillis.
Huh? He changed his mind about the carnival?
Yeah, maybe he got scared off when he learned I was going to tag along.
Perhaps. You know, I just remembered something.
What?
Gillis was the one who originally recommended Madame Berkoff to me.
Oh, that's interesting.
The two of them could be working together.
One thing, sure, I can't let Henri out of my sight from now on.
But that poses a problem. If they suspect who you are, nobody will contact the boy while you are around.
You mean if they know I'm around?
I don't understand.
Henri will be disappointed at not going to the carnival, so why not let Madame Berkoff take him? We'll tail along behind and see what happens. Of a head start, then tail them to the carnival. They wander around, taking it all in, but nobody contacts either one of them. Finally, they sit down on a bench to rest. Madame Berkoff takes a scratch pad and pencil out of her purse and gives them to Henri, who starts scribbling on the paper. Pretty soon he shows it to her. She crumples it up and tosses it on the ground.
Mitchell, they are leaving.
Yeah. I think I just figured out the deal, that piece of paper. She has him write stuff on it, maybe things that don't mean anything to him. Then she crumples it up and tosses it to the ground beside the bench. Come on.
Look, the man over there. He has a bag for scraps of paper.
Yeah, and a pointed stick. He could be the contact, but we're beating him to it. Here we are. Now we'll see.
What's written on it?
Oh, great. Have a look.
A drawing. Wait. It's supposed to be you. See? He has entitled it The New Tutor.
Yeah, three heads yet. Another lead up in smoke. I'm getting nowhere fast. We tail Henri and Madame Berkoff back to the house. I find them in the kitchen. Madame is dialing a number on the telephone.
Oh, such a nuisance, Monsieur Michel. 3 times in 2 weeks.
What's the trouble, Madame Berkoff?
The boulanger has forgotten to send a brioche again.
The who forgot to what?
The baker. He forgot to send the breakfast rolls. Hello, hello. Let me speak to Monsieur Fronard. What? He's talking to a customer. Very well, I will wait. I do not know what it is these days, Monsieur Mitchell, but it is impossible to get service. If it were not that these were Henri's favorite rolls and very hard to get. Henri, remember that nice restaurant in New York? They had some there.
Oui, it was a very nice place.
That was the place he played the trick on me.
Trick?
Mais oui, he pretended to be the waiter. You see, he memorized the entire menu and rattled it off to me.
Oh, brother.
Do you still remember it, Henri? Oh, I suppose not.
Of course I do.
See if you can tell Monsieur Michel.
All right. Appetizers. Shrimp cocktail, 75. Tomato juice, 40. Assorted relishes, 60. Soups. Soup de jour, 50. Onion soups.
Suddenly it registers the whole deal slides into place. I ease out of the kitchen and get to another phone fast. I have the police trace Madame Berkoff's call because I've got a strong hunch it isn't to a bakery, and I'm right. It's to an apartment nearby. I get there fast and barge right in.
Oh, oui.
At a table by a telephone sits a guy with a pencil and a paper. It's Kenko. The other gent who applied for a job is tutor. Hello, Kenko.
Let go of me.
I just want this piece of paper.
No.
Thanks. Well, well, deciphering a code, huh? Troop movements to Korea.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, save it. You and Madame Berkoff have been working this deal together, and you've had a pretty neat setup. She gets the kid to memorize a menu that's really a code message. Then she puts in a call to somebody, supposedly a baker, but it's actually you.
No, Michel, I do not know.
So then she gets the kid to repeat whatever it is while she holds the receiver out so you can hear it and take it down. Then you decode it and deliver it. Yeah, very neat, except you just went out of business.
Not quite, Monsieur Michel.
Well, Madame Berkoff.
Keep your hands in sight, please. I saw you leave the kitchen and realized you must have found out, so I followed you here. Give that message back to Kenko at once.
Kenko reaches for it. I start to hand it over, then suddenly grab his wrist and jerk hard. He slips around in front of me just as she pulls the trigger.
Kenko!
Thanks for the gun, sweetheart. Yeah. You just shot your little playmate.
Ken
Uncle!
Looks like your neat little organization just went out of business. Didn't end up quite the way you'd planned, but I guess it wasn't just in the cards. Or maybe I should say, on the menu.
Our star, Brian Donlevy, will return in a moment. Tuesday night is Comedy Night here on the NBC Radio Network. There's fun for all because it's all for fun. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis add melody and mirth to our program schedule when they caper through 30 minutes of fun-filled comedy entertainment. Fibber McGee and Molly, longtime favorites of the radio audience, continue to hold their place in the comedy spectrum as they take you to 79 Wistful Vista and loads of laughter. Red Skelton's comedy characterizations add life to his rollicking program, and the fun adds up to enjoyable radio listening. And when it's time for Two for the Money, each Tuesday evening you'll know that Herb Schreiner will be handing out chuckling good entertainment along with big cash prizes. Yes, Tuesday night here on NBC Radio adds up to the finest entertainment available today. So keep your date with comedy fun, and next Tuesday listen to Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, Red Skelton, Fibber McGee and Molly, and Two for the Money with Herb Schreiner. They're all on most NBC stations every week.
Next week, Tibet. I fly the hump and collect a lump.
And that will be Steve Mitchell's dangerous assignment next week. Featured in tonight's cast were Jeannie Bates, Paul Frees, Larry Dobkin, Peter Votrin, and Jerry Novello. This is John Storm speaking. Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell with Herb Butterfield as the commissioner, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian John Doe and is directed by Bill Karn. Be with us next week at the same time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another transcribed Dangerous Assignment. Tomorrow, it's Adventure with Roy Rogers on NBC.
That is Dangerous Assignment from April 8th, 1953, where he goes to Paris and thwarts a spy ring. That's Brian Donlevy as Agent Steve Mitchell, who worked for our government and took care of problems all around the country. Lisa's dressed like a lumberjack today. She's got her lumberjack shirt on. Yeah,
that's what Dan said. It's not.
Dan said the same thing?
Exactly the same
Come on.
Thing. He said you're going to go cut down some trees tonight?
Well, you do have the biceps for it.
Oh, yeah. I'm.
She's
yeah.
got
well,
huge,
I did work
she's like
out
Popeye
today.
Arms.
Yeah.
Well, that would be forearms, though, actually. Popeye had big forearms.
Yeah, he did. Well, I like spinach. I can't eat it out of a can.
You look like a lumberjack.
Yeah, I was thinking that. It's the shirt.
Yeah.
It's not,
So
though.
Maybe you can see her on, go to WGN, what is it, WGN Radio and click watch?
Yeah.
Okay. See Lisa just, the Lumberjack. And that
plaid.
Rhymes, too, Lisa the Lumberjack. It all flows like listen to Lisa.
I should do a show about Lisa cutting down trees or something.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're back in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, in our next hour, we are going to tune into a very popular comedy show, started on radio way back in 1939. It was still going strong in 1952, which is the year of the episode we're going to play, the very last year it was on the air. There was a lot of actors that played Henry Aldrich over the years, including Ezra Stone, who originated the role. But by 1952, we had a different actor. His name was Bobby Ellis. And Bobby Ellis went on to make quite a few movies and do some other television shows. But he played Henry Aldrich on radio during its last couple of seasons. And it still had the original mom and dad, Catherine Rott and House Jameson. You'll hear them on this episode. A different Homer Brown on this. Jackie Grimes plays Homer Brown. And I think you'll enjoy it. That's coming up
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
We have a request from one of our listeners.
Okay.
I'm going to read it to you so we get the words exactly right. And I quote, "Tell Roger no more bad news if possible. It interferes with the flow of the show. Good news is okay."
Okay, got that? No more bad news. Okay.
Right. What are we listening to, The Wiz? Don't nobody bring me no bad news.
That's
don't
right.
no, don't yeah. nobody bring me no bad news. Yeah.
So, I will endeavor, but we do need to bring again the definition of news. One of the many definitions is things out of the ordinary.
Now here's the thing. During the WGN Radio Theater, he's saying.
Only
other time
things.
Is okay.
Okay.
The WGN Radio Theater is on.
I got it.
No
we
more.
We have a happy flow here. Good, you know, clean
good. We got a good vibe.
I get it now. I get it.
It's a good vibe going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, you come in
positive,
there and you kill that whole vibe when
I'm
you talk about something.
It's not me. It's the news. I don't shoot the messenger.
Well, make some good choices, Roger.
I'm
at least tweak it or say it in a happier way.
Yeah, smile.
Let's say it's bad news. You say it like, okay, you know, like
I can't really say
there was
like
a volcano in India.
Wait,
do it like this.
Was?
Do it like this.
Yeah.
A volcano erupted
in India.
And a whole bunch of people lost their homes.
Now
and,
we know why he's not doing the news, Roger.
Can you do it like that?
Yeah, I'm so glad
try
you're
to put a little
show.
Spin on it. A little happy spin, if you could. All right? That was a request. We thought we'd pass that along to
you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much to the listeners.
All right. In this hour, we have the Aldrich family, Lisa. Good comedy.
Henry Aldrich.
Coming, mother.
You know, it's such a period of time.
This
you have
great.
To love it.
You know, this is why we have this show, Roger, on Saturday and Sunday nights, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything more fun than these classic radio shows?
I mean,
I love movies. I love classic movies. In fact, recently on Turner, they had a whole bunch of Boston Blackie movies.
Yeah.
And I taped them all, and I've been watching them.
You
and
put them
just
on a tape?
Watching,
he's got a VHS
taping,
machine.
No, actually, I put an 8mm camera on tape next to my. It's like a kinescope.
He taped it.
He drew pictures real fast. He flips them on a card so he can walk.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Chester
Carl.
Morris, of course,
Carl,
was Boston
funny.
Blackie.
Yeah,
and I think I told you this before. For years, Chester Morris's son was a very big wig here at WGN Radio, Kenton
Morris.
Oh, I think
you
did. Kenton,
you mentioned
that
a long time ago.
I had lunch with him one time, and when he told me his father was Chester Morris, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
His dad was Boston Blackie.
That's awesome.
I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
So I've been taping those, but I digress. I digress.
Yes.
But I love classic movies. I love new movies. I love the classic television shows. I watch Antenna TV all the time and MeTV. But there is nothing that compare to these classic radio shows, in my opinion. I love these. I've been collecting these shows since I was 12 years old. I have about 100,000 shows. And we only have shows direct from master recordings. That's the only way we'll collect them. And we play them for you guys here every Saturday and Sunday from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. Talk about them. We don't know everything about them, but we try to learn. And sometimes, Roger, when we mess up, our listeners know the answers, which is
great.
Oh,
I know. They're great fans.
When I mess up, which is quite often.
Really?
Quite often. Our listeners will text in and say, no, Carl, you got that wrong. It wasn't so-and-so. It was this person, or it was this shampoo was the sponsor, or it was not on ABC. It was on NBC. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
You can pass it along because I wasn't around when these shows were on the air. I was born in 1963. These shows were already off the air. So I'm learning as I go as well.
Well, you say that the episode that we're going to be listening to was in what year?
1953.
And 53?
50, mm-hmm.
So that was
52.
I'm sorry, 1952.
That was the year I was born.
1952.
Yeah.
Wow.
And just so we know we're all on the same page, Roger, the next text says, I think that's a great idea for Roger. Find lighter, happier, better news stories.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Here's the other thing you can do, Roger.
It's a lot of pressure.
You can just let the world know to not do anything bad during the WGN Radio Theater, and then everything will be
This is
peachy.
Supposed to be a happy time, so
yeah.
we're going to keep it happy.
So
again,
let's get
not
to Happy Aldrich here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just keep that in the back of your head when you're putting the news together.
In the back of your head.
I got a headache back there. Okay, go ahead.
All right, in this hour, it's the Aldridge Family, and it's brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Siberia, about a diamond merchant who travels to Russia and falls into an obsessive relationship with a Russian cafe owner.
Okay.
And the winner gets two tickets to see the rock musical Hair.
Long, now, beautiful hair.
There you go. Now playing at the Mercury Theater, Chicago. Sun shine in. Good morning, starshine.
And Aquarius.
The Age of Aquarius. It's all going to be there. And I'm going this week. I forgot August is this week, so I'm going this Thursday, I believe.
Wow.
I will be there.
Gosh, my birthday's right around the corner, Lisa.
It sure is.
I'm expecting something really good.
I always do.
I mean, yeah. You know, Lisa gets pretty good presents, Roger.
Yeah, but
I know.
Pretty good.
She got me some great ones. Wore the socks at the 4th of July parade.
She's very generous. Lisa, very generous.
Fantastic.
I'm going to go to the dollar store. Don't you worry.
For Carl, right?
Yeah.
All right, so win two tickets for Hair, 312-981-7200. Give us a call right now. Now, here's a hint. This actress was the star of Pretty in Pink.
Yes, I'm mad. There are public bathrooms all over the place.
All right, who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words. Let's play that movie clip again. All right.
Yes, I'm mad. There are public bathrooms all over the place.
All right, we've got Steven on the line. Hi, Steven.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you.
Who's that actress? She was very young there.
Molly Ringwald.
Molly Ringwald is absolutely right, and I hope that you're a big fan of Hair, because you've just won two tickets. It's a rock musical. It's playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago. I can't wait to see it this week. It's running through September 17th. Great music, great theater. You can get tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Congratulations, and thank you for calling in.
Hey, Steven.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Yay.
Hey, Steven, you know what? This actress actually had a cousin in the business, too. Her name was Sally Ringworm. Did you know that?
Now I know that.
Yeah. All right, that was funny, I know.
Listeners can call in for this kind of stuff. Other people have to actually... Never mind.
What?
Never mind. Just... Steven, congratulations, buddy. Enjoy the play.
Don't listen to him.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay,
right,
take care.
We appreciate you. All right, it's time for the Aldridge Family. This was a teenage situation comedy series, Lisa. It ran on radio. It was also seen in films and on television. There was even a comic book series. It was created by Clifford Goldsmith, and Henry Aldrich was a bumbling kid. He was growing awkwardly into adolescence, sort of like Roger, you know. Roger was born in 1952, and then he grew awkwardly into adolescence, and then he got a great voice and became a big WGN
big star
news anchor. An actor, did you know this, Roger? An actor by the name of Ezra Stone started this.
Yeah.
He was already in his 20s and then played this character into like his late 30s.
Yeah.
And he just had a way, you know, kind of had sort of like Richard Crenna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Richard Crenna was able to do that with his voice playing Walter Denton on Our Miss Brooks. Bobby Ellis played the role in 1952, and that's who's the star of this. And the parents, Alice and Sam, were played by House Jameson and Catherine Rott. Now, Homer Brown originally was played by Jackie Kelk, but on this particular episode, he's played by Jackie Grimes. It came to TV in 1949 for one season with a totally different cast. But we have an episode now for you. This is going back to 1952, October 26th, the last year on the air. This is Spelling Bee. Here is Bobby Ellis as Henry Aldrich on The Aldrich Family.
Henry! Henry Aldrich!
Coming, Mother!
Yes, it's The Aldrich Family is transcribed, written by Clifford Goldsmith.
Men who work with figures say that the average American family consists of 4.2 persons. And that certainly is true of the Aldrich family. For Sam and Alice, Mary and Henry always add up to 4.2. The extra 2/10 is contributed by Henry because he's a typical teenage boy plus a little something extra. The scene opens in the Aldrich hallway. The time is evening.
Hey, Henry, what are you doing?
Looking for the phone book, Homer.
Are your folks going to be there tomorrow?
Be where, Homer?
At school. Have you forgotten, Henry? Tomorrow is Parents' Day.
Shh, Homer, not so loud.
Huh?
My folks are right there in the living room.
Are they going, Henry?
No. Boy, am I lucky. They've forgotten all about it.
Well, how do you know?
Well, the notice came 2 weeks ago, and my mother put it on the table. Then about 3 days later, somebody threw it out. I forget who.
Boy, I sure hope my folks forget. If there's one thing I hate, it's Parents' Day.
Same here. Do you go all the pieces, too, on that day?
Henry!
Yes, Mother?
Why don't you and Homer come into the living room?
Well, I've got to put in a call, Mother.
Who are you going to call?
Viola Farnsworth. Thought you told me to get a date for tomorrow night.
Well, sure, but what do you want to take Viola for?
Listen, Homer, she's a darn good-looking girl.
Number, please.
Elm 273.
Elm 273?
Yes, please.
Henry, didn't you ask Viola to go to something a week ago?
Sure.
And she turned you down, didn't she?
Homer, the reason she turned me down was because... Will you please stop breathing down my neck?
Henry, she'll only turn you down again. Why embarrass yourself?
Homer, do you hear me? Can't you go in the living room and read the National Geographic?
Okay, but don't say I didn't warn you.
Hello?
Hello? This is Hen.
Who?
Hen, don't you remember? Henry.
Oh!
How are you, Viola?
Fine. Henry who?
She was Henry Aldrich.
Oh, hello.
Are you studying hard for tomorrow?
You mean for Parents' Day?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, would you like to go to a dance tomorrow night?
With you?
Sure.
No, thank you.
Well, you mean you can't?
Yes.
Would you like to do anything Saturday night?
No, thank you. I'm going to be busy Saturday night.
How about a week from Saturday night?
Well, I can't very well tell what I'll be doing that far ahead.
Oh. Well, I guess I'll see you at school tomorrow.
You will? All right.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, Henry.
Don't bother me, Homer.
Didn't I tell you you shouldn't ask her?
Listen, Homer, you don't even know what she said to me.
All right, Henry. I wasn't going to tell you because I was afraid it'd hurt your feelings, but, well, I happen to know Viola doesn't want to go out with you.
How do you know that?
She told Agnes Lawson.
She did?
Sure. Do you know what she said her folks said?
What?
That you weren't the right kind of company for her, and they didn't want her to be seen with you.
Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth said that about me?
Why should you care what they say, Henry? You've got lots worse things to worry about than that.
What?
Well, I'm not sure, but when I was in the living room just now, I think I heard your father say something about coming to school tomorrow.
You couldn't have.
All I know, Henry, is what I thought I heard.
Gee whiz.
Where's my coat?
Right there on the floor.
You want me to get a date for you tomorrow night?
No, I don't.
Well, so long.
So long. And Homer, when you see Agnes, will you please tell her to stop spreading stories about Viola?
What'd she say against Viola?
You know, what you just told me.
Oh.
Father.
Yes?
Father, could I ask you something?
What's on your mind?
Well, how's business?
Business? Quite good, thank you.
Henry, have you done all your studying for this evening?
I'm getting my book out right now, Mother. I just... Father, are you going to be busy tomorrow?
Why, I expect to be.
Where?
What do you mean, where?
Well, at the office or around town.
I'm going to my office in the morning, if that's what you mean.
You are? And will you be quite busy down there?
I hope so.
Well, I'm glad to hear the business is so good.
And I'm glad you feel that way.
Sam, can I get you something?
No, thanks. I'm going upstairs a moment. Henry, please get on with your homework.
I am, Father. Mother, do you mind if I ask you something?
Oh, if it hasn't anything to do with your algebra.
Gee, it hasn't anything to do with anything. Do you know Viola's mother and father?
Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth? I know them slightly.
Oh. Mother, did Father say he was going to be busy all day?
Henry, I thought you were going to study.
I am studying my Latin. Look, I'm on page 18.
Well, suppose you keep right on, then.
Omnes artes quae ad humani. You know what Agnes said somebody said about me?
What?
Never mind, nothing. But gee, I don't see how our folks can jump to conclusions when they don't even know me.
Whose folks don't even know you?
Anybody's. Gee, what's so terrible about me?
Henry.
Henry, are you translating Latin?
Oh, me? Sure. Mother, do you think Viola Farnsworth is so good-looking?
What's that?
I mean, what right has Homer got?
Homer? Dear, is there something in that book that confuses you?
No, gee whiz. Mother, would you mind asking Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth over here for dinner sometime?
Dear, we don't even know Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth.
That isn't the point, Mother. You're just looking at things backwards.
Have you ever met the Farnsworths?
Well, yes, but only under what you might call unfavorable circumstances. So why couldn't you have them over here sometime and let them see what Father is really like?
What he's what?
Henry getting his work done?
What's that, Father?
Henry, I think you'd get a great deal more work done if you'd take your book and go up to your room.
Now?
Now.
Before Mother answers my question?
Henry?
Yes, Father, I'll go. Oh, only first, Mother, may I ask one thing?
Well?
Well, if you should meet me on the street, out of a clear sky, see, and you never met me before, what would you say?
Why, I think I'd say, here comes a very fine-looking young man.
You would? Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Alice.
Yes, Sam?
Why in the world did he ask that?
Now, dear, didn't you ever wonder the same thing about yourself?
Yes, but I never went around asking people.
Sam, how would you like to have Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth over for dinner some evening?
What on earth for?
Well, if I read between the lines, Henry wants them to see that his family is at least civilized.
What are the Farnsworths like?
No, I'd like to know too, dear. Why couldn't we at least ask them to join us tomorrow?
You mean when we go over to the school?
Yes.
Why?
Well, they've never been to Parents' Day.
Well, give them a ring. Only, Alice, are you quite sure we shouldn't tell Henry that we're going to be there?
Sam, you know how nervous Henry got when we went last year. I think it would be much nicer just to surprise him. I'll bring your bacon in just a moment, Sam.
Did you reach the Farnsworths?
No, dear, I just tried them again.
They must be pretty social. Out last night, line busy this morning. I guess they're out of our class.
Will you call Henry, please?
Henry!
Yes, Father, I'm coming right now. Could you sort of tighten this tie for me, please?
What are you wearing a bow tie for?
Well, I don't know. I just thought maybe it would make me look different.
From what?
From...
Please sit down and eat your cereal.
Yes, Father.
And don't spill anything. I've never seen you look so neat, and I'd like to save the memory.
Yes, sir. Would you mind asking me some of the questions in this history book while I'm eating?
Very well. This is something you're going to have in school today?
Yes, sir. Well, in a way, it is.
When did the Civil War start?
April 12, 1861.
Did the move to secede have general acquiescence among the southern states?
What's that?
Did the move to secede have general acquiescence among the southern states?
Acquiescence? Will you pass the cream, please?
Here you are.
How do you spell that word?
A-C-Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-C-E.
Oh, acquiescence, sure, naturally.
What does it mean?
Well, that was when the war started. Things were sort of mixed up in there.
Henry, suppose you go in the living room and look up the word in the dictionary.
Now?
Now.
Yes, Father.
Acquiescence.
A-C-Q-U-I.
Sam?
Yeah?
Well, they're still busy.
Who?
The Farnsworths. I just tried to phone them again.
Alice, are you sure we shouldn't tell Henry that we're trying to get them to go down to the high school with us?
Dear, why not wait and make it a double surprise?
Father, acquiescence means to accept.
That's fine.
Kentucky didn't do it, and Missouri didn't know what to do.
Hey, Henry, anybody home?
Gee whiz, is that you, Homer?
You know what time it is?
Oh, boy. I've got to go, Mother. I certainly don't want to be late on... Goodbye, Mother.
Take your banana, dear.
I've got it.
Raise your tie.
Gee whiz, is that crooked again? And thanks very much for all your other help, Father. Goodbye.
Gee, Henry, am I sick.
What's the matter, Homer?
My darn folks are coming to school.
Oh, boy, that's tough.
And you know what's going to happen? My teachers are all going to call on me and make a fool of my whole family.
Boy, I'm sure glad I'm not in your shoes, Homer.
Miss Eggleston.
Miss Eggleston?
Yes, Homer.
I've got a wonderful idea.
Well, what is it, Homer?
As long as this is Parents' Day, don't you think it'd be a good idea if instead of my coming into English class, I act as sort of an usher?
An usher?
Well, sure. I'll stand right outside the classroom, see? And whenever I see a parent that doesn't look as though he knows where he's going, I'll say, wouldn't you like to step in here and listen to English?
Well, that's very thoughtful of you, Homer, but we're going to need you in the spelling bee.
In the spelling bee?
Of course. It's going to be one of the main features of the day. Some of the boys are going to spell against some of the girls. I think the parents would enjoy that, don't you?
If I'm in it, mine won't.
You are in it.
Oh, boy. Miss Eggleston, I know this sounds like an excuse, but frankly, I've got a sore throat.
Homer, I'm sorry, but I'm busy, and I shall have to ask you to leave the room.
Yes, Miss Eggleston, I'll go. But my throat's getting worse every second.
Hey, Homer.
Let me alone, Henry, will you?
How about delivering this note to Viola Farnsworth?
No.
Please, Homer.
Henry, why are you wasting time writing her notes?
I didn't write it. I didn't write a word of it. I just cut it out of a book.
Well, let's see it.
It's just a little write-up, Homer. Here, it's about my father.
Gee whiz, what was that printed in?
In his college yearbook when he graduated. He was a big shot in his class.
Boy, does he look different. What did they call him? Dapper Sam?
Sure, Dapper Sam. Here, read the whole thing.
Dapper Sam Aldridge, perhaps a bit stuffy at times, but generous, brilliant, and most likely to succeed.
Pretty good, huh?
What do they mean by stuffy?
Well, my mother got him over that. How about it? Won't you please give it to Viola?
If I will you do something for me?
Sure.
Okay. Go in and tell Miss Eggleston you'd like to take my place in the spelling bee.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Homer. What spelling bee?
Just a little spelling bee. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Fun for who?
Henry, my folks are going to be there, and yours aren't.
Homer, I've got a sore throat.
Don't give me that. I thought you said you'd help me if I'd help you.
But, Homer, you know what my spelling is like.
Do you want me to give this note to Viola?
Well, sure, but that's entirely different.
Do you or don't you want it to know your father used to be considered bright?
All right, that's the first portion of The Aldridge Family with Spelling Bee starring Bobby Ellis. Let's take a quick break, then it's more after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're listening to an episode of The Aldridge Family. Let's go back to October 26, 1952 for the conclusion now of The Aldridge Family.
Good morning, students.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we begin our history, I think it would be very nice if we introduced our visitors. Class, this is Homer Brown's mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Brown.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Brown.
Now then, who would like to answer the first question?
Oh, I would, Miss Buckley.
Well, that's fine. But I think we should let Homer have the honor. Homer, will you stand up, please?
Yes, Miss Buckley. Don't you miss my book?
Now, Homer, in what year did the Civil War begin?
Why, in what year?
In what year?
The Civil War? Was that in today's lesson, Miss Buckley?
Yes, it was.
Oh. Well, I guess I'm not thinking very fast.
Well, that's quite all right, Homer. Suppose we let you sit down and give you another chance later on.
Yes, Miss Buckley.
Henry Aldridge, would you tell us the answer?
Who, me? Well, it was in 1861.
That is correct.
To be exact, April 12th.
Thank you, Henry. You may sit down.
Yes, Miss Buckley.
Well, I see we have some more visitors.
How do you do?
Class, we're glad to welcome Mr. and Mrs. Aldridge and Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth.
Good morning, Mr.
I believe there are plenty of chairs right here in front.
Thank you.
Now then, suppose we let Viola Farnsworth answer this next question.
Yes, Miss Buckley.
What were the basic causes of the Civil War?
Slavery and economic difference.
Oh, that's fine. Now, the next question, I think we should let Henry Aldridge have the next one in honor of his parents. Henry?
Yes, Miss Buckley.
Did the move to secede have general acquiescence among the southern states?
Well,
I'll tell you, Miss Barnes. I mean, Miss Buckley.
Take your time.
Well, I guess I'm afraid.
Henry, you told me at breakfast Kentucky and Missouri were doubtful states.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Aldrich, but I'm afraid we'll have to ask our visitors not to give any assistance.
I beg your pardon.
Homer?
Yes, Miss Barkley?
That piece of paper that you just started to pass to Viola, does that have anything to do with our Civil War history?
Well, it's from around that time.
Well, that's fine. I'm quite sure then all of us will be interested in hearing what it has to say.
You mean you want to see this?
Will you stand up and read it, please?
The only thing is, it's...
Now, let's forget that we have visitors. Just stand up and read it right out.
Right out?
I think we should keep up on everything that anyway pertains to history.
But, Miss Barkley...
Homer.
Yes, ma'am. It says, Dapper Sam Aldridge. Perhaps a bit stuffy at times, but generous and brilliant. Homer!
Sam!
Henry!
Henry, not knowing his mother and father were planning to visit his school on Parents' Day, has agreed to take part in a spelling bee in place of Homer Brown. The scene opens in the school corridor, a few minutes before the contest is scheduled to begin.
You wait, Homer. You just wait.
Henry, could I help it if she made me read it?
If you think I'm going to go into that spelling bee for you, you're crazy.
But, Henry, you've got to.
Oh, no, I don't. I'm going to tell Miss Eggleston to put you back in.
Listen, Henry, you gave me your word. You're in the spelling bee.
Henry!
Yes, Father?
May I speak with you, please?
I know what you're going to say.
So long, Henry. I'm going into the arts and crafts exhibit.
Henry, I don't believe I've ever been quite so embarrassed in my life.
Father, I didn't know Homer was going to read that. The whole thing was out of my control.
That isn't what I'm referring to.
And what is it?
In history class, you're not remembering that it was Kentucky.
But Father, my mind went blank.
Didn't I send you into the living room during breakfast to look up the key word acquiescence, and didn't you come back and tell me the correct answer?
Yes, Father.
Then why did you act as though you didn't have a tongue?
Because right at that minute, I couldn't have told you my own name.
Henry?
Yes, Mother?
Where's the arts and crafts exhibit?
Gee, I don't think you and Father would enjoy seeing that, Mother.
Don't you have anything in there?
Well, yes, but wouldn't you rather have me take you around the building and show you the gymnasium or something?
And what room is the exhibit?
Well, I don't know the exact room.
Well, will you please go down the hall and ask someone?
Yes, Mother, I'll go.
Sam?
Yes, Alice?
I'm not sure, but I don't think I like the Farnsworths.
Frankly, I don't like them either.
Did you see Mr. Farnsworth's face when Henry couldn't answer that question?
I saw it.
Hey, Mother, the exhibit's right here in room 101.
Well, let's go in.
I warn you, you won't like it.
Oh, yes, we will. My goodness, look at all the things.
Look at that card table. Henry, did one of the students build that?
Yes, sir. But that was sort of an advanced course.
Henry, look out. You're backing into someone.
Oh, gee whiz, excuse me.
Well, that's all right. I hardly felt it.
Oh, is that you, Mr. Farnsworth?
It is.
Henry, your father and I are going to walk over and look at the mechanical drawing.
All right.
Young man.
Yes, Mr. Farnsworth?
Do you happen to know who built this model airplane?
Well, that was built by 5 or 6 of the boys. They all sort of got together on it.
Were you one of them?
No. No, I wasn't.
Now, what did you build?
Well, I built this thing right here.
What is it?
Well, it isn't anything. It's just a paperweight.
Well, how did you happen to put your time in on a thing like that? Well, it's nothing but a brass ball.
Well, I made it out of a square block, see, on a machine. I thought it'd be fun to see if I could make it perfectly round.
Father!
Yes, Viola?
Oh, hello, Viola.
We were just looking at Henry's paperweight.
Henry, did you make that?
Sure. Would you like me to show you some of these other things?
Oh, no, it's almost time for the spelling bee.
The spelling bee? Are you in that, too?
Of course.
Do you mean to say, young man, that you were in it?
Well, in a way, I am.
It ought to be quite a contest.
Yes.
I was just looking at this card here by your paperweight. Did you letter this?
Yes, sir.
It says, Sphere made by Henry Aldrich. And Sphere is spelled S-P-E-R-E.
Oh, I didn't spell it that way.
Henry, you kill me.
Listen, Viola, anybody would think you never made any mistake.
Henry, isn't that the bell for the spelling bee?
Yes, I think it is, Father.
This is something I don't want to miss, Mr. Aldrich.
Your daughter pretty good at spelling?
Well, I'll certainly stake her against any boy, any time.
Yes? Well, just to be a good sport, I'll stake Henry against any girl.
Father, you don't really want to go in there, do you?
I'd like to see anyone keep me out.
Come on, Father, we're going to be late.
Right.
Sam, wait for me.
Hmm? Mother, are you coming too?
Well, of course I am.
Well, look, do you have any use for this paperweight on your desk?
Henry, did you make that?
Sure. Could you just put it in your pocketbook?
Well, dear, I can't very well carry a brass ball like that around. Aren't you supposed to leave it here on exhibit?
She was, no. Don't know why I entered it here in the first place.
Sam.
What?
Put this paperweight in your pocket and hurry up or we'll be late to the spelling bee.
Now then, please. The boys will stand on this side of the room and the girls on the other side.
Yes, Miss Eggleston.
Incidentally, perhaps I should have said beforehand how delighted we are to have so many guests present. Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth, Mr. and Mrs. Brown, Mr. Marshall, Mrs. Johnson, that's Teresa Johnson's aunt, of course, and Mr. and Mrs. Sam Aldrich. Now then, let's draw the first word for the girls' team. Betty Chase, your word is... Reconnoiter.
R-E-C-O-N-N-O-I-T-E-R.
Correct. And now the boys. Willie Marshall, I believe your word is to be erysipelas.
Erysipelas. E-A-R-Y-S-I-P-E-L-A-S.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Viola Farnsworth.
Erysipelas. E-R-Y-S-I-P-E-L-A-S.
That's very good. Viola's one of our best spellers. We're very proud of Viola. The next word will be spelled by Henry Aldrich.
Yes, Miss Eggleston.
Biscuit.
Biscuit?
Yes.
That you eat?
Well, if that's the way you think about it.
B-I-S-C-U-I...
Correct.
Correct?
The next word.
R-R-A-S-S-E-D. Embarrassed.
Correct. Well, there aren't quite as many standing as there were a few minutes ago, are there?
No.
Now, let me see. Toby Smith, the next word is psychology.
That's a sense, psychology. P-S-Y-C-H-O-L-O-G-Y.
Sorry, that's wrong.
Wrong.
Betty Chase, will you spell it for us?
Psychology. P-S-Y-C-H-O-L-O-G-Y.
Correct.
But that's the way I spelled it.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yes, yeah,
oh,
sure. You did, Miss Eggleston. That's the way.
He did, boys.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Toby, I wish you'd spell a little more slowly. You may remain standing. And Betty, you'll have to have another word.
Yes, Miss Eggleston.
Your word is deceitful.
D-E-C-E-I... T-F-U-double-L.
Wrong.
Oh, no, I wasn't. It's I before E, except after C.
But that isn't where you went wrong. Henry Aldrich.
Yes, Miss Eggleston. D-E-C-E-I-T-F-U. One L.
Right.
Oh, I don't know why, Henry.
Wrong. Well, now there are only two left standing, which makes it very exciting. Viola Farnsworth and Henry Aldrich. The next word is for Henry. Ukulele.
Ukulele. U-K... No. U-K... No.
Well, which is it?
U-K... U-K-U-L-E-L-E. Ukulele.
Right.
Oh, boy!
Now, Viola, your word is acquiescence.
Oh, gee whiz.
I'm sorry, let's not have any remarks. It's Viola's turn.
Acquiescence. A-Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-C-E.
You're wrong. Now, just a moment. Viola's not down unless Henry spells it correctly. Henry, it's up to you.
Oh, boy.
Come on, Henry.
Come on, Henry.
Quiet now, please. Let's not confuse him.
Acquiescence. Acquiescence. A-C-Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-C-E.
Right. The boys win.
Boys!
Well, son, were you nervous?
Well, I was at first, Father, but all of a sudden I forgot that you were in the room and Mother and Mr. and Mrs. Farnsworth. And then I remembered breakfast and you sitting there with my book and your boiled egg. And then... then acquiescence came right back into my mind.
Sam, the Farnsworths left word that they were driving on home.
Alone?
I think they preferred going alone.
Well, the feeling is mutual.
Hey, Henry, you're wanted in the main office.
Oh, gee whiz.
Mr. Bradley, sore as the deuce.
What about?
Well, didn't you take that paperweight out of the arts and crafts exhibit?
Sure, but it's mine, Homer.
That doesn't make any difference. He says you're to take it right straight back and leave it there until you get your award.
My award?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. You got third prize for form and precision.
No kidding. Well, what do you know?
And Viola wants an answer to a note she gave me to give to you.
A note from Viola? Where is it, Homer?
I lost it.
You lost it?
I remember what she said, though.
Well, what did she say?
Dear Henry, would you please accept my humble apologies?
Well, Homer, tell her I acquiesce.
The Aldrich Family is transcribed is written by Clifford Goldsmith. Henry is played by Bobby Ellis and Homer by Jack Grimes. Mr. and Mrs. Aldrich are House Jameson and Catherine Rott. Your announcer is Dick Dudley.
Tonight, it's the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show and Theater Guild on the Air over NBC.
That's the Aldrich Family, October 26, 1952, with Spelling Bee, Bobby Ellis. Starred as Henry Aldrich there, Jackie Grimes as Homer Brown, and a good episode with Dick Dudley doing the announcing on that is heard on NBC.
YR Entertainment Music Group, a Life in God Movement International Ministries, reminds listeners that readers are leaders and education in the home is just as important as in school. Visit rossglover.com or yremg.com. That's from YR Entertainment International Ministries, a global inspirational music publishing record company that provides a variety of quality sounds and knowledge to express freedom, justice, and righteousness in music, books, clothing, film, and ministry. Call 312-802-6612.
Well, you know what, Lisa? I thought it would be fun tomorrow, or actually tonight when we come back here at 11 p.m. We have some more classic radio shows for you.
Right.
Tales of the Texas Rangers, and then we have The Halls of Ivy and Murder at Midnight. Although I think we're going to play Murder at Midnight first. We're switching the order around.
Well, I think Murder at Midnight should be at midnight.
I know, but it's not. I think it's going to be at 11
p.m. Really messed
up. We have Dan Jaffe, Dave Weiske coming in here at 11 o'clock. Talk a little bit about Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. Then we're going to do a drawing, give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter. Make sure that you get your picture in of your kitty cat. Email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Now, Lisa's lipping it.
I was doing it. Lipping.
You're lipping it.
Is that a word?
Yeah, lipping.
Lipping?
Lip syncing.
That's closer.
Lip mouthing? What do you call it?
Yeah.
What is it called?
I was making fun of you because that's what you do to me. It's called teasing.
I know. Well, you know, I thought it would be fun tomorrow if we, or tomorrow, tonight.
Tonight we're going to continue our song choices.
It was fun. I sent them out. Folks, if you guessed one of our songs last week, I mailed them first class. I did it myself. I went to the post office.
Wow, Carl.
Wrote out the thing.
Did the layman's job.
I did. I don't have an assistant like you. I don't have 14 assistants.
Right. Well, tonight it's going to be from.
That do your toenails and your nails.
Well, that's important. Tonight it's going to be from 1970.